Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. I'm your host, Sam Dosa. Wherever you are in the world, you are welcome to my podcast, which has been running since June 2020. I have privilege to invite amazing guests. I've already reached about 70 episodes on my podcast, which is available on iTunes, Spotify, and other major brands or platforms. You can check this out. It's called Chai with Sam Dosa. Today I got another exceptional guest. She is based in the UK, and we met on another platform called Lunch Club, and we just clicked on there, and we thought she got something to share with my audience, so I thought I better invite her and join us, and let's see where the journey takes us from here. So let me give you a snippet of her journey. She is a career and business psychologist and coach, because the psychologist part is important, and it means it will use as business psychology exercises and psychometrics to help with the career and work decisions people might have. And she actually is also a director at the Redundancy Recovery Club. And that part is quite interesting at this present situation which we are going through in this present climate. So without I take a lot of time jabbering about things, let me invite my guest, Paula Gardner. Welcome, Paula, to my podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa.
Hi, Sam. Thank you for inviting me on.
It's a pleasure. So tell us, first of all, start with the journey of your journey and who Paula Gardner is and what is her purpose in this amazing world.
So early in my journey, I thought I wanted to be a journalist and did English literature at uni and trained to be a journalist. But I went out to Australia to live for a while. And it was during a recession and just could not get a job in journalism. In fact, it was very hard to get a job, any job. And it was there that I came across PR. So I discovered PR. So it uses a lot of the same skills as journalism, and found myself a career in PR. I started off in music PR in the UK. And then I set up my own PR company, which I did for many years. And when I had children, I decided rather than doing PR for people, I was going to teach PR. So that was really interesting because I was then working with the people who couldn't afford the big PR companies. And actually often they're the ones with the really interesting stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did that for quite a few years. I had two books published, Do Your Own PR and Get Noticed. Which was another tick off, you know, I'd always wanted to be a published author. And so I must have done PR for probably about 15 years and decided that I was just getting a little bit bored with what I was doing. Some of my people might call it a midlife crisis, but I was questioning lots of things in my life at that time. And I'd also split up from my husband, so was out dating again. Mm-hmm. And met a guy on a first date. Mm-hmm. And he was in his 50s, and he was retraining from a psychologist to becoming a barrister. Now that's 7 years of training, and he was basically saying to me, you know I'm going to love the job. And even though it's 7 years of training, that's a good 13 years at least of me doing a job which I know that I would love. And he really inspired me. And I was at that time, I was doing a bit of moaning about, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. And because he'd been a psychologist, we started talking about how I'd always been interested in psychology. And in fact, when I was a teenager at school, I went to the careers officer there and told them that was what I wanted to do. And in those days, you know, they're not as enlightened about career choices now. And she said to me, well, you're either going to end up working in a mental hospital or a prison. And I went home and told my parents this, and they were, oh, no, we don't want you to do that. Hence the English literature degree. But all this sort of came back to me after this conversation with him. So, I mean, at the end of the day, at night, he said to me, so why don't you do it? And I was, well, I've got money to earn. I've got 3 children. You know, I can't just do it. But the next day, I just looked at my local uni and found that they had various psychology masters and so on. And I phoned them up. I spoke to the psychology department, and straight psychology sounded quite alien at that time. But he said, look, you've got quite a long career in business. Go and talk to the business psychology department. And I did, and it seemed a perfect fit. And by the end of that day, I was signed up.
Wow.
48 hours previous, I hadn't even thought of doing it. So it was one of those very serendipitous moments, meeting the guy. And it would be a really fairy tale movie if I told you that we were together, but we're not. But we are still friends. We are still in touch. Yeah, and it was that point that actually changed my life. I did my master's. I did quite a lot of career stuff as part of the master's, and then went on to do a further qualification in coaching. Yeah, and here I am. This is what I do.
Wow, what a journey. What a journey. I think a lot of people are still stuck, and they are not looking at the brighter picture or a bigger picture, as you gone through with your own journey. And careers counselors were not that affluent at that time when you were when you went for your own career decisions. But I think what has happened now later in your life, everything started to make some sense. Meeting that person, looking at as a long time partnership, but you end up finding your career, your need. Mm-hmm. Which is in the disguise was a blessing for you. That it's sometimes you know, universe plays quite a different role in our life, and sometimes people come in our life for a reason and for a season. This is a phrase. Mm-hmm. Some friends come in your life for a reason and a season, and then they go away. And sometimes these people come in your life and they are becoming your friend, but they're main thought is to boost you so you can become a butterfly to start flying instead of stuck in your cocoon and thinking how I'm going to do this, how I'm going to do that. One thing which I've always fascinated that women can do wonders in terms of their career, their, even though they have children, but they still manage to do a lot of things instead of men. But some women create a lot of different wonders, which I don't want to go into. So that shows that there is a light end of the tunnel if you put your mind to it, and if you just follow your gut instincts to take you to there, right? And during this whole journey, now you said you are a mother of 3 kids. How old are your children?
Now 25, 22, and 18.
Wow, grown up, huh? Grown up. They have another set of challenges.
You want to... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a proud father of 3 girls as well. So my older is 20. She's just done her second year in university. And I got set of twins. They're going to be turning 17 on Saturday. So, and then I have 2 stepdaughters as well. So one is going to be 17 and another is 13 years old. So yeah. I'm surrounded by a woman.
Yeah, wow, yeah. I mean, I have to say, I do think my son going to uni, which was what was happening at this time, was another factor in my career change, because I had been going to all the open days with him and, you know, visiting these beautiful libraries, and there's a certain sense of buzz around learning, isn't there, at uni? And just thinking, oh, you know, I'd love to do this now. So I think that's why I chose to do a master's rather than just retraining. Mm-hmm. I did want to be part of a university.
Amazing. So now, as you become a business psychologist, give my audience a little bit about what this all entails.
Okay, so a lot of what we do is personality based. So I do a lot with psychometric tests. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one that you might have heard of is DISC.
Yes. Which,
yeah, talks about different behaviors and communication styles. There's also Myers-Briggs. I mean, there are many, many out there. And depending on the people or the companies that use me, we work out which ones are right. And then basically it's about making people's lives and workplaces work for them. So they're working for the company, and you know, the people are happy. So I'm doing quite a lot at the moment with businesses which have people working from home. And I mean, it's amazing the things that are going on in that, you know, obviously extroverts who are used to that stimulation all around them aren't getting it. And extroverts often need to talk to other people to make decisions. And, you know, this, once you know that, you know, you can set your workplace up so that you have those opportunities. But, you know, basically I'm going in and telling people that and helping them do that. So that's one of the things that I do. But also, you know, I do a lot with women, midlife women, who, I don't know if you saw it, for instance, there's a story in the UK, in the Telegraph, in, I don't know, a few months ago, that said women over 53 who have been made redundant in this pandemic, it's quite possible that they will never work again, which is, you know, a frightening concept. So I do a lot of work with women around, you know, the confidence to go for the jobs that they want, building up their visibility. You know, it isn't necessarily right that somebody younger is better for a job. Mm-hmm. They may be hungry and you know, up to date with all the latest technology. But, you know, once you've got years of experience under your belt and stories to tell and that gut instinct home, you've got a lot to offer yourself. And I think a lot of women don't realize that. I mean, you were talking earlier about how, you know, women are amazing and so on, and you're right, but a lot of women don't realize that.
I think that's what I was, because in my coaching, there's sort of women do come and talk about certain things, and they always said to me, Sam, I'm just a housewife. And I said to them, really? You are just a housewife? Do you think you can change that housewife to a completely different designation if you want to give it to yourself to become a house manager or house CEO or something like that? Shift something differently, because you look after your children, you look after the entire house, you look after the morning, evening, and afternoon, everything you are doing for the house, you're doing shopping, you are doing this, you're doing that. Yeah, now trend is changing, men are doing the same thing right now, but the society always look at the woman has this responsibility to do everything. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some women who does the whole thing, the whole shebang, bearing the children, looking after the house, or looking after the husband, looking after the in-laws, looking after this, looking after that, but then running a business and doing this and still happy. But then again, it comes from a lot of different support. People take care of them. And as you say, you know, when a woman goes through with whether it's a postnatal depression to the menopause, to go through with a couple of other things, it affects their body. It's because men's body is completely different than the woman's body. And that's where I started to tell a lot of men that, okay, we do have a lot of chemicals in our body, but it does not impact that much than the woman's body. Chemicals impact their body because they have a monthly cycle to go through with it. And that the cycle, it comes from many other things as well. So when And then a man, what we do is we are fixers. We want to fix things. Yeah.
Mm.
You come to us and you say, Sam, this has happened in my workplace today. And you started fixing things for her. And she will look at you and say, I know how to fix it. I don't want somebody to fix it for me.
I just want to let off some steam.
Yes. And that's what a lot of men does not understand. And that's where a lot of relationship breaks down on the communication side of it and listening side of it. Because as I said, we are fixers. I used to be a fixer, but I'm completely shifted my life in the terms of I'm just a good listener, become a good listener, to just listen. And I do not intervene until somebody says to me, so what is your thought on this? And I said, okay, this is how it is. But I'm not going to interject because this is what the learning has to be. And I was trying to understand we men only suppress things. Well, that's why I talk about a lot of those things about emotional intelligence. You know, and people say, why emotional intelligence is important? I said, if you do not have emotions and if you do not have intelligence to how to manage your emotions, you are in a completely wrecked situation.
Yeah.
You are suppressing. My man suppresses. That's why men die early. It's not because we don't eat good food or we don't have good relationship with our with things. But we suppress everything. We have a problem, we just suppress it. Because they say, oh, I'm a man. I do not want to show my vulnerability. Yesterday I was having a discovery call with one aeroplane pilot. And he said, you know, everybody says to me, by this time you're supposed to be a billionaire. So I said, what's stopping you? He said, that's the problem. I don't know what's stopping you. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, there is something which I'm actually assessing is that there are a lot of vulnerabilities you are holding down to yourself and it's not letting you go up. You are shackling down yourself. And that's where the problem lies. And he says, Sam, I don't want to talk about my vulnerabilities. And I said, listen, it's going to be a safe space where you're going to discuss. And then you can leave those vulnerabilities or cut them away from your body or your system. You can start flying. What you are doing is you say, I want to be a billionaire, but I don't want to be a billionaire because I don't know what's going to happen. I'm afraid of success or I have a fear of failure or something like that.
I think women have the same thing. You're talking about, you know, the men listening, which is, you know, a great move, but also by their own token, I think women are more powerful when they know when to ask for help. You mentioned about the woman doing everything and she has a support thing.
Yeah.
I think often women believe that they should be doing anything and that they can't ask for help. So, you know, there are often men in their lives who are desperate to help them, who are desperate to fix things for them. So I do think women can take that opportunity and ask for help.
And I said to my daughters, I said, if you don't ask, you don't get. Life is full of surprises. Yeah. And if you think, oh no, I'm not going to ask my dad about this, or I'm not going to ask this about to my professor or something like that, what you're going to be doing, you are suffering yourself. And you're going to be talking about this thing to somebody else because they don't have a solution. The person who got the solution will give you a response quickly.
Yeah, and most people like to help, don't they?
Absolutely. People are ready to help. But again, we feel our ego not to be hurt. You know, I said, I want to stoke my ego. No. You are so beautiful. You are so courageous. You know, we don't want to ask for help. Even I'm drowning, I don't want to ask for help.
Yeah.
And that was the pinnacle of situation. And you now in this say of career psychology or business psychology, and you know that a lot of women who have babies and want to go back to work, how afraid they are to go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
They are not looking forward to going back to work. I actually experienced myself because I was leading a team and this lady wanted to come back to work. But HR was putting so much pressure on her. And I said, I'm the father, and I know how it feels to bear a child. I know how it feels your postnatal depression. I know how it feels to go through with uncertainty in your body and everything. And then your baby is crying. You have to rush to the center to collect your daughter or your son. And I said to her, you know what? what HR is saying, perfectly fine, let's work between us. So I spoke to the HR and I said, listen, she's working for me as my team member and I have to look after her. Yeah, she's a very good asset to the team. So I could create some flexibility for her. I said, okay, let's have a flexibility. Like, why don't you do this? Work from home certain days. This is how it's going to manage. So it became a very good relationship between me and her. And she appreciated it because not every employees or employers look at that as an asset.
No, we and then people, don't they? People, good people will go elsewhere.
Yeah.
Although, you know, this pandemic is, I think it's changing all that, the working from home thing, the flexibility. They have to do it now. They just have no choice for the, you know, mums and dads.
Yeah. And that's what I wanted to convey to a lot of big companies. You know, your company got ambassadors. They are assets. Don't look them as just a number. And most of the big companies just look at their employees as a number.
Mm-hmm.
If one number is going to cut off, who's going to give monkeys a power?
Yeah.
Correct. And as you are speaking to a lot of people, you know, there is a lot of things need to be understood by senior executives. Emotional intelligence is the pinnacle of everything. And if you do not manage your own emotion, how are you going to manage other people's emotions? In this pandemic, a lot of things have happened. A lot of people have done a great service to humanity or people. And a lot of people have actually completely wrecked it up. Because as well, is rather we get rid of all those people who are in their age and ask them to apply again for the position. Or we're going to give them a redundancy, or we'll say, sorry, we don't have enough money to keep you. Yeah. And then they will give you a redundancy and then say, if you want to do a job again, you apply for the position. So how do you feel? Like, oh, I've been doing this job for 7 years and am I going to apply for the position again? And they change the job description. I have noticed this with my eyes and I was completely shocked. One of the members says to me, Sam, I apply for the position and they change the job description and in my interview. They said, well, you do not have this qualification. I said, well, when I read the job description, this qualification was not there.
Really?
Yeah. How cunning is that?
Yeah.
How cunning is that?
Well, I mean, I do agree. I do think, obviously, many, many companies are struggling at the moment, but there are those who are taking advantage of it.
Yeah.
And using it as a way to, you know, to get rid of people that they don't necessarily need to get rid of.
Wow. So
good practice out there, but there's also bad practice. Yeah.
So in your, at this present moment, when you talk about DISC, psychometric assessment, there is MBTI, as you mentioned, then there is, which I look after, is emotional intelligence psychometric assessment.
Yes.
For senior executives or anybody, actually, it's not about senior executives because everybody has to learn about how to manage their emotions, not control their emotions. So a lot of people, everybody thinks, oh, I can't control my emotions. And so listen, first of all, you are saying completely wrong that you want to control. You can't control nobody's life and even your own life. You can always manage everything. So let's start managing things instead of controlling. So these are the pinnacle. So how do you keep the journey of being people who says to you, okay, Paula, we need people to identify their traits in their career. How do you go through with that?
Well, usually we actually sit down and work out what it is that they need help with. So for instance, with some people it might be a team, like getting this team to work well together. With another cases it might be recruitment. There might be two or three people vying for a job and they want help working out which one is, you know, going to be the one that's best for that position. Sometimes it might be people who are struggling, and often when it is that case, and I do some work with them, I use something called SavaWave in that case, and we can actually identify that there's another place in the company where they would really flourish and they're actually in the wrong role. And then, of course, you mentioned Myers-Briggs, which, I mean, most people have done Myers-Briggs in some form, whether it's true Myers-Briggs or 16 personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great sort of way of bonding, I find. People like to find out what other people are and what it means for them. And the other one that I do is risk. So risk type compass. In a lot of entrepreneurial tech companies, risk is part of the landscape nowadays. So it's good to know how risk averse or risk happy people are, because you don't want, you know, either sides of the equation. And risk is something I really find fascinating. So it's developed for airlines, really, recruiting pilots.
Okay.
And, not only pilots, but also air traffic control. And on the air traffic control side, they originally thought that they wanted people who would be very, you know, wary and careful. But actually, that's not the case. You want them to be prudent. But, you know, if the automatic side of things goes down and they have to make decisions, we need people who can who've got the guts to make decisions straight away. You know, split second decisions, they're not going to dither about. So risk is something that I find really fascinating. And we all have different propensities for risk. Part of it is the way that we're brought up, and part of it is, you know, the environment that we're in. So that's a really fun one, actually, to work with companies with. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, risk. Risk decision making on that sort of area is quite intelligent. And it brings me to that when a pilot was being trained to fly an Apache helicopter, they have to train him to use both his brain, side of the brain, right and left, because he has to also learn how to use his eyes in a direction he wants to see. So he has to train to look. We can only, when we say we are going to be looking here, we always move our eyes over here. And with them, it's like they are using both his eyes, they're looking one eye here and one eye there to see where the danger is, where the things are coming from. It is fascinating. And I think we have the capacity to create this. There is no such thing we can't. But again, you know, you need to be in the you need to be ready to receive, or you have to be coachable, because sometimes people are not coachable. You know, people want to fly further in their life, but they are not coachable. Yeah, they are not coachable, correct? And it affects them. Yeah,
I think it's about timing as well. You know, another year's time they might be coachable because they've reached that place. Yes. But you know, at that particular time, they just might not be ready. I do believe that everybody is coachable, but I also believe that sometimes it's not the right time.
Indeed. Because sometimes I've met so many coaches, and I met so many people who are just forcing a lot of people to be coached. And I said, why are you forcing people? If they are not ready, they are not ready. You can't actually. And in the companies as well, companies nowadays saying that, listen, we can't send you to a training center. We used to send you the training center where you go and do your training. Right now, everything is online.
Yeah.
And we're giving you the pass. Now, it's your choice to attend that journey of learning something new and upskill yourself, or you just sit there stagnated, and then come every year in your remuneration and says, oh well, I'm still stuck, I'm not doing anything. And your manager will say, well, we have given you all the resources, why don't get time? Well, this is your journey. You need to decide how you want to go out, how you want to jump on that train of learning to excel yourself. So
it's mindset, isn't it?
It is a mindset. So in your capacity as a director for this redundancy hub, what is your responsibility?
So so basically the hub was created for all the many people who've been made redundant recently and in the future. And so what I've done is I've interviewed lots of experts. I've got contributors together. I've done my own tutorials and articles and created three main sections. So there's back to work, which is all about getting people back to work. There's change in direction, which is for those people who, you know, want to have a little bit of a pause and think about, like I did, think about changing direction perhaps. And that could be starting a business. It could be retraining. Could be an apprenticeship, because you can do an apprenticeship at any age. People don't realize that.
Really?
Yeah. Or it could even be retiring. You know, there are some people thinking, okay, I might retire now because I've got, you know, I'm in the good place. And the final section is the bit that I'm most excited by, because it's a bit that a lot of redundancy resources don't cover, and it's called you, and it's all about the other things that are impacted by redundancy. So obviously your money, your relationships, your confidence, your physical and mental health. Mm-hmm. I think these things are often forgotten sometimes as a, you know, as a side effect of redundancy. For instance, talks about, you know, the grief cycle, because redundancy is in effect a bereavement.
It is.
So where, you know, what you might be feeling, you know, how you might be feeling, what should you do? Should you pick yourself up and be happy and get on with things, or should you, you know, stay there for a while but risk getting stuck? You know, it's quite interesting things around the whole process of grief after redundancy.
Indeed. I think I went through for my redundancy once I was working in central London, and I was being given a company to work with, but their attitude was just to create another CV for you. There was nobody listening. They were just saying, yeah, you're traveling from X number place to this place, just come here, we will help you to design your new CV for you. And there was no heart-to-heart conversation. I think they might have bound to so many people to come and do that. They might not have that skill set, so they are not supposed to be given that skill set to say, well, yeah, sit down and talk to them. They might need it. Because that's an opportunity. It's a big opportunity to you working with a lot of people. As you said, people might going through with a financial. You guide them to go to this financial services person. You ask them, they are going through with uncertainty in their psychology or physiology or something. And then, okay, you go and talk to these people. So there is a lot of stand to a lot of things. But sometimes people don't see those sort of things. And it's just doing the things, which is just tunnel vision, I would say. Mm-hmm.
There's also a bit of panic, isn't there? Well, we've made redundant, right? You've got to get a job straight away.
Yes.
And, well, obviously, you know, in many cases you do, but I think sometimes what happens is people get a job and it's a job they shouldn't have. They're really stuck. When if they took a little bit longer and thought about what it is that they wanted and crafted the perfect CV for that, they might now be in a place that was an improvement on where they were. Yeah,
I think this is again the guidance. You know, a lot of people does not get sort of guidance. And again, it's also the panic between husband and wife, or they're living together with somebody else and they started panicking about how we're going to pay the bills, or how we're going to do this and how we're going to do that. We've got children. And so there are a lot of things goes in their mind, and somebody has to say, listen.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're right, the panic. I mean, as you know, I'm sure you know that, you know, in stressful situations, it's your amygdala that takes over.
Oh, yes.
And you can't think. Yeah, you can't think, can you? So
you started thinking, how are you going to pay your bills? Are you started how am I going to do this? I was redundant, and I was redundant twice, actually, in my career. And I remember those times. I came home, and I was sitting at home and waiting for my ex-wife to come, and I said, oh, I've been redundant. And you need a support. You know, you need a harmony and a support with the person. And so first time she supported me, but next time she didn't support it. It was like, oh, get a job. Get another job. Go find any job. And it doesn't work like that. How am I going to diminish my value where I'm standing right now? And you're asking me to diminish myself to go to any job? And because we have been conditioned like that from our childhood, that you're always going to work for others, you have not the capacity to do your own business. So you always remain in a job for the rest of your life.
Mm. Yeah? I do think, you know, people like talk about the side hustle nowadays. Yeah. I think that's one of the most empowering things that people can do for themselves.
Yeah.
Even if they have a job, to do something on the side, to prove to themselves that they, you know, they have the edge and the wits to make their own living if they have to.
I was talking to this chap on Lunch Club, and he said, Sam, I'm working in an industry which is a good industry, but I'm still finding it difficult to acknowledge myself. I can get another job in another company doing the same thing, but I'm not interested. I'm finding it difficult because I got two children. I'm working from home right now, and I can see how it's actually creating my connection with my kids. And my wife is a teacher, and she goes to work and come back, and we talk about different things. And now I started a different hustle where I'm creating a specific makeup, which is a disposable makeup, and which is a organic makeup. So you use and you dispose it of, and it's not going to harm your skin. It's not going to harm the soil or whatever is going into it. Everything is going to be organic. And it started this business online, and is interacting with all those girls who are on Instagram, who are love to do makeup and everything. So he's connecting with those late girls and say, you know, you get a percentage if you're going to sell my product. And the idea is so amazing. And he says, you know, I want to just uplift this, and I just want to just leave my job. I don't want to do the job. I want to work with passionate about. And this again comes from where? It comes from a place of understanding what you really want for your life. And that's where a lot of people are stagnated in their job, of a rut of 9-to-5 rut of saying that, oh, my job is my security. Who says that? No security.
Not anymore. Yeah.
It's never been a security. It's never been a security because you have been anchored or you've been hooked telling that you got a security. You know what I was being told when I was working in BT? Once my remuneration was sitting there and I was with my manager, and he says, you know, Sam, you are lucky that you got a job with us. That's how I was being told.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel about that when somebody says to you, you will feel really unsettled? Well, we don't want to give you a remuneration because you just feel thankful that you got a job, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was completely shocked. I was vulnerable at that time because I had 3 young children. And I was vulnerable at that time because I thought, you know, if I'm going to lose a job, how am I going to survive with my 3 kids? And you feel like you feel like you've been cheated at that time, but you do not have to raise your voice. You can't raise your voice. And that person who was my manager was in 50 plus. Didn't he go through his own journey of working and supporting his own family? Does this person does not have a heart? Or he got a...
Yeah, I'd probably argue though that he was talking from his position, and that he probably felt lucky that he had a job, and he felt safe in inverted commas. It says a lot about his fear, doesn't it?
Yes, I get it now. I get it completely now. But at that time, when you're listening, and this is what
are you talking about? Yeah, and it stops you having a voice, doesn't it? Because if you say anything from that point on, you sound ungrateful.
Yeah. Wow. Great journey. Is there any message would you like to share with my audience?
Oh, wow, good question. I think we've talked about journey and change, and I told you a little bit about mine. But I think the important thing is not to put pressure on yourself to change, because I think it does happen. Even if you think it's not happening, and if you feel a bit stuck, like you are, you know, you'll be meeting people, you'll be having conversations, perhaps not quite as actively as we were, you know, when we weren't in lockdown, but things are slowly happening in your brain, you know, subconsciously and so on. And I'd also advise people to experiment, like you know, you talked about the guy with the makeup and the dropshipping, and he probably started it just as an experiment. He didn't start it with the view of that's going to be my future. And like trying lots of little experiments, and some things will work and some things might, you know, take off and think that's the way, and some things will fail, but not putting the pressure on that everything has to work and be perfect. Just experiment. Just, you know, life is an experiment, and view it that way, and it really takes the pressure off.
True. I said life is an adventure.
Mm.
Enjoy the adventure, enjoy the ride, and have fun instead of being more analytical to assess your life, that my life is supposed to be like this or like that. It doesn't happen like that.
No. Never is.
Thank you very much, Paula, for being a great asset onto my podcast, Chai Sentosa. And I will be putting Paula's information in regards to LinkedIn profiles and other information that she provided me on this podcast, so you can communicate with her directly if there is any questions which might have triggered on this our podcast today in regards to redundancy or anything like that. Please get in touch with her, and she will be able to help you with that situation which you're going through. Thank you very much, and have a fantastic rest of the day. Bye for now.
Thank you for having me.